Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Barely 1 week after a deadly mass shooting in Georgia, the nation is reeling once again from yet another one. Both crimes raising questions about why they happened and who was specifically targeted. Well, Georgia's shooting, putting race and anti-Asian violence under a magnifying glass. And tonight we're looking at these issues and more. My guests are D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine and Jennifer Wang, Deputy Director of Programs for the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum. Also, you, the listener. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Ms. Wang, thank you for joining the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Attorney General Racine, again, thank you for joining the program as well.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Harold. Good evening, Ms. Wang.
Good evening.
So let me first start with the shooting, specifically the shooting in Georgia. Attorney General, do you believe that this is a hate crime?
Well, look, I think, clearly there are hallmarks of an offense here, murders committed and directed at a particular group of people because of their ethnic origin. The hallmarks that I would look at are that these were clearly targeted Asian businesses. The proprietors and the employees were, as far as the public reports indicate, almost all Asian. And certainly there were at least seven Asian Americans who were killed. And so I think it does have the hallmarks of this. Now, it's important, of course, to allow an investigation to be thoroughly completed before we reach a conclusion. But I would really urge the public to discount the words of the suspect here that are, I think, self-serving.
Let's talk a little bit more specifics about that, because I think that's one of the things that a lot of people, laypersons, people who are just citizens that are looking at the shooting in Georgia and even looking at the shooting yesterday in Colorado. The lion's share of the people who were killed in Georgia were of Asian descent. But then there's an argument, well, all of the people who were killed in Colorado yesterday were white. And so, and the suspect is of Middle Eastern descent. So how do you, even though he's an American citizen, and so how do you as someone who may be charged with applying criminal charges to someone, say that one is or one is not a hate crime?
Sure. I think you asked a really good question, and that's why at the end of the day, we've got to wait until a complete investigation, including obviously looking at the Atlanta shooter's social media, talking to friends of his and others to develop a complete profile. I don't want to be haphazard here, but I do think the Atlanta situation is noteworthy in the sense that the shooter not only went to one destination, that's where he first committed murders, but drove to another specific Asian business. And so I think that there are, distinctions, but at the end of the day, I think it's all of us should withhold judgment until a thorough and full investigation has been made.
Ms. Wang, you may not have those restrictions. You are a woman of Asian descent. This hits home for the Asian community as it relates to the Georgia mass killings. When you heard about it, did you say, oh, well, obviously this is a hate crime, or are you also reserving judgment?
Well, when I first heard about what happened in Georgia, my first reaction was that, you know, I was appalled and I was devastated, because quickly the news about the victims revealed that six of the people who died were Asian American women. And when I heard that, I was horrified. I immediately became not shocked, but I immediately thought of the long legacy of violence that Asian American women and women of color generally face in this country. You know, racist stereotypes about Asians combined with hypersexualization of Asian women and Asian American women put the women who died at risk for experiencing racism and for experiencing sexism combined. And particularly Asian American women who work in low-wage jobs are vulnerable to racist and sexist harassment and even violence. And as we saw in Atlanta, sometimes that violence results in the loss of their lives. And that is something that predated the pandemic. I know that right now we are talking about anti-Asian hate and violence more because of the pandemic, but I want to be clear that Asian American women have always faced hate and violence when we left our houses, when we were in the workplace. And that has remained the case during the pandemic, where Asian American women have reported 2.3 times more hate incidents than men over the course of the pandemic. But like I said, we have always moved through public spaces knowing that we could be subjected to sexual harassment, physical intimidation, and assault because of our race and gender combined. And when I leave, if I do leave my house in the morning, you know, I cannot leave the fact that I am a woman at home, and I cannot leave the fact that I'm Asian American at home. And, you know, these killings are part of an ugly history, and that history is intertwined with our history as a nation. So, you know, the Page Act of 1875 was actually our first immigration law in the United States. And that law tried to stop Asian women from coming to the United States under the assumption that East Asian women were or would become sex workers. And I think what we saw in Georgia is a continuation of the playing out of the stereotypes about us that are not just because we're Asian and are not just because we're women, but because we're Asian American women.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we are talking about hate crimes, specifically crimes against the Asian community and the rise in those numbers over the past year or so, certainly one could argue culminating in the horrific shooting in Georgia last week. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Ms. Wang, this is the reason why I gave you the example as a person of Asian descent and looking at what happened. Yes, the low-hanging fruit is, yes, we're all appalled. But as a black man, and I look at the situation in Georgia, I don't necessarily have any of the, I don't think some of the legal constraints. But the first thing that comes to my mind when I look at the African-American community and similar things, let's talk about the Mother Emanuel 9 shooting in Charleston, South Carolina. You had a white perpetrator, 9 black people killed in a black church. I do not need FBI examinations and investigations to tell me that's a hate crime. I don't need an official word. And so now we look at what happened in Georgia. We have a white suspect, of course. He is innocent until proven guilty. Yes, we understand that. But again, whether it was, you know, one place or three places, you know, the lion's share of the people who were targeted were women of Asian descent. That to me is a common sense, you know, that's a hate crime. And I agree with you, Ms. Wang, that this is nothing new. But do you believe that this has been exacerbated by some of the comments that we saw coming from the White House last year? You know, some of the things that I just dare not even, you know, repeat as it relates to the pandemic.
There's no question that when our leaders use racist, anti-immigrant, xenophobic remarks, like what we saw all last year, that some people will echo those remarks and echo those beliefs. And, you know, I think you're exactly right. When we saw the Black church in Charleston get targeted and nine people die, that was an act of white supremacy. And when we saw a man open fire in Texas and he said he wanted to kill as many Latino people as possible, that was an act of white supremacy. And what we saw when the shooter targeted the three Atlantic area spas, resulting in six Asian American women's deaths, that too was an act of white supremacy. And I would connect all of those things as acts of white supremacy to how deeply rooted that is in our country. And I would urge us all as well to consider the reality that women of color suffer this multi-edged blade of white male oppression and white supremacist oppression, because as we have seen, sexual violence and racism and xenophobia are all too often intertwined when it comes to violence against women. Mm-hmm. And we ran a poll only a couple of weeks ago. It was before the shootings, but it's a very recent poll. And that poll revealed that half of Asian American and Pacific Islander women respondents had been affected by anti-Asian racism in the past 2 years. Now, this was a poll just of Asian American and Pacific Islander women. And these results tell me that as we are people in the public sphere, and as we enter anywhere from a store to a spa, which might be our place of work, to a place of worship or to a school, we're almost always facing this intersectional type of hate and violence when we do experience it. Mm-hmm. And when I talk to my friends, my family, and they ask, well, is it because you're Asian or is it because you're a woman? And there's no possible way for me to know. There's no possible way for me to separate those two things. And I think what we have seen in the wake of the Atlanta shootings is that it actually harms and makes women invisible when mm-hmm. we try to separate those two things.
Let me go to the phone lines. We've got a lot of calls on here, and I want to bring the Attorney General back in as well. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Calvin, calling from Northeast D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Absolutely. Good evening. I find it appalling that they're trying to say that this was what happened in Atlanta was not a hate crime. This gentleman, this white Caucasian gentleman, passed several strip clubs before he got to his destination. Holly Berry's ex-husband Eric Bonet was a sex addictor, but I don't believe he killed anyone with his behaviors. So I think that if they keep doing this, if they keep giving this approval to these white males to go ahead and do what you want, storm the Capitol, kill Asians, kill black people, walk down a street with a rifle and shoot protesters, this will keep on happening because they keep allowing them, they keep giving them their approval. This was clearly a hate crime, and if we don't cut it off at the top, like that officer said, he was just having a bad day. That white Caucasian officer said he was just having a bad day. This will never stop. This will never stop.
Calvin, thank you so much. Attorney General Racine, about that, he said, cut it off at the head. You know, from your perspective, how do you do that?
Well, let me just say that I think Ms. Wang was powerfully truthful
and her argument is exactly right. The intersectionality of the hate as to Asians, and specifically the stereotypical and hate that's directed at Asian women, comes together in this matter in Atlanta to really, really make us all know that the root of it is indeed hate. And here I would argue, just as she did, that what we're talking about is white supremacy. Not unlike your caller, and as Ms. Wang indicated, I think history really is important. And Harold, I know that you care a lot about your callers, and that's why you are painstaking in explaining history to them.
Yeah.
And the history of our country, certainly in regards to Asian Americans, has also included a fairly consistent and outrageous set of circumstances that were racist. Ms. Wang mentioned a particular act related to the immigration of Asian women. We know about the Chinese Exclusion Act. We know about the internment of Japanese Americans around World War II. And by the way, remember, in World War II, we were fighting the Germans as well. Have we heard about internment of Germans? No. We also know that when the Vietnamese came to our country after the Vietnam War, there was a lot of violence and a lot of fear stoked around the concept that they were going to somehow take the jobs of white folks. We know about the history in 1982 of Vincent Chin and his brutal murder in Detroit. And so this is part of our history, and leadership calls upon us to confront our history, be clear about it, and then do better.
Hold your point, Attorney General. I need to take a quick break, and I will let you finish your point also. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We have a call from Laura. We're going to take that on the other side. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. Download the app from Google Play or the Apple Store. This discussion continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2 in a few seconds. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're continuing our conversation about hate crimes and acts of violence against people of Asian descent. My guests are D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine and Jennifer Wang, Deputy Director of Programs for the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum. Lines are still open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Attorney General Racine, please continue your point.
Yes, and my point really is for us to all get a reckoning around our history. And once we get a reckoning around our history, we don't have to be beholden to it. We can actually act against it. And we can certainly act against it by refusing to go along with reckless and violent and dangerous scapegoating. Scapegoating of the sort that we saw the prior president engage in with respect to immigrants generally, Mexican immigrants specifically. Ms. Wang talked about the horrific killing of 23 Mexican-Americans at a Walmart because they're Mexican-American. And, of course, we saw the president fanning the flames around, you know, the alleged virus of pandemic, really recklessly including in his screed that almost all Asians are responsible for this. The president didn't have to say that. He didn't have to scapegoat people. He knew that his words were violent and dangerous. Now is the time for us to come together and call out for true leadership that does not engage in scapegoating.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Caller from Laurel. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Caller, are you there? Give us a call back if you can. Let's go to D. Oh, forgive me. D. Oh gosh, we lost the Attorney General. Forgive me. Let's see if we can get the Attorney General back. D. Calling from Arlington, Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Okay, so I really think that there are some issues here. First, just that there are two separate gun violence issues. One is violence against minorities and people of color, and just the awful what happened with the Asian women. And then the other one is just violence in general with these white males. And I know, Harold, you don't like the word narcissist, but in this case, I think it fits, because when you have these white men with guns running around killing people, and they don't seem to be stopped for any reason, they seem to have this carte blanche, this blanket, like, oh, they just had a bad day thing. I think that's what it is. It's entitlement. It's white supremacy. They're self-important. They lack empathy, and they're sociopaths.
No, don't get me wrong, Dee. I don't like the word narcissist applied to every man that walks the planet. I say that the word is overused, but in the context that you're using it, I think you're quite accurate. But please continue.
My other thing is that I have a problem with the NRA because they have manipulated the Second Amendment. The Bill of Rights was set because the United States had been recently freed from the English monarchy, and they said, okay, well, let's put together our own laws and form our own government and establish our own independence. And the Bill of Rights clearly says that the Second Amendment is the right to bear arms, but it says for militia. These are not militia situations, and we don't have militia situations. But yet the manipulation of the Second Amendment so that people can have guns is just, to me, ridiculous.
Well, I think you make an interesting point there, and certainly a critical point for discussion that we may have in a future date. But as it relates to racial-based violence, which is where we're kind of living right now, I think that this remains a critical issue. And let us be clear, Ms. Wang, for example, the African-American and the Asian American community in this country have, how can I put this, a complicated relationship. And that complicated relationship, that complicated historical relationship, makes this a really difficult conversation when you have majority black communities, and yet many of the corner stores are owned by, by Asians. And there is a tension. And I'm not just talking about D.C. I'm talking about Baltimore. I'm talking about Buffalo, New York. I'm talking about New York City. I'm talking about Miami, where it is an issue. And African-Americans are not blameless in this. If you go in and you listen to someone who was ordering, Thai food, Chinese food, or what have you, sometimes I'm appalled by the way that we address the people who are on the other side of the counter. And there may be cultural issues as well. So talk to me, Ms. Wang, about how that complicated and difficult relationship is made even more difficult by where we are right now, Georgia, in the past year or so.
I think what we have seen in the past year is how much solidarity is between our communities. For instance, I know that there just in the last week has been so much demonstration from our black brothers and sisters about their solidarity with our community in the wake of the tragedy in Atlanta. I think that I was a child in Los Angeles during the Rodney King riot. I certainly think that we have to pay attention to our histories, and I think that we need to invest
if you'd like to make a
multicultural and cross-racial dialogue. But I think what we've seen is so much solidarity between our communities. And part of the reason why, I would say, is because our communities are really invested together
in tearing down white supremacy. Because if the last year, if the last decade really has taught us anything, it's that we are routinely targeted by white men with guns. You know, I talked about the Charleston church shooting. I talked about the Texas shooting where, you know, where A.G. Racine talked about, you know, how that shooter wanted to kill as many Mexican Americans as possible. We just saw the Atlanta area spa killings. And that was, you know, I've already talked about how that was absolutely a crime of racialized misogyny. And we and other leaders in the movement strongly believe that at the root of all of this is white supremacy and white supremacist culture, and that the tides have to turn on that, because our nation is founded in white supremacy. And I think that all of what we have seen play out is in direct response to that, right? The PAGE Act, which I talked about previously, that is a white supremacist anti-immigrant law that directly targets Asian women from entering the U.S. And if you look at our communities, our laws and policies and structures are routinely keeping our communities down. And that's where I think we need to focus, because, you know, there is so much overlap in the ways that we experience white supremacy. And I'm not saying that we're all the same, because we're certainly not. And within our own communities, we're not the same, right? We're not a monolithic community. We're an incredibly diverse community. The same goes for other communities of color. But there's no way that you can argue against the reality that white supremacy and the ways that it plays out against us are causing us so much harm.
A.G. Racine, from your perspective, prosecuting hate crimes, race-based hate crimes, is that one way to get a message out to the broader community right now? And if so, what's your philosophy on addressing that issue?
Well, there's no doubt that accountability is important to getting through any problem, and certainly when there are violations of law, whereas here murder, then clearly accountability and full prosecution, including prosecution of hate crimes, is absolutely necessary. I do think that Ms. Wang was making a very powerful point. And the powerful point is that you might remember the Tree of Life synagogue killing. Again, a white supremacist hated Jews, went up there and killed Jews at a synagogue, blamed the Jews for being supportive of Mexican immigrants coming into the United States of America. Well, if you talk to the rabbi at the synagogue, he will tell you that immediately he heard from the local imam and the entire Muslim community that came to be supportive of their fellow Jewish brothers and sisters. All too often, part of the white supremacy game is divide and conquer, where one group is supposed to feel closer to the supremacist group and thereby hate the group that is farther away. We can't play that game. That's a loser's game. The game is to treat everybody equally. The game is all about being more proximate, close, establish relationships with people who may not look like you, may not pray to the same God as you, or may not be of your same gender or sexual orientation. That's where we need to get to as a society, where we're establishing core relationships and we're basing those on the way people treat each other without regard to these artificial categories. And that, I think, is the goal, frankly, of the perpetuation of what we're talking about here, which is white supremacy. If I can add one point that I think is really important, right now in America, we do not have a system that actually catalogs, collects, gathers, and sends the hate crime data to the FBI. in over 74% of law enforcement jurisdictions do not send up the hate crime data to the FBI. So there's a massive underreporting of the problem. There's an act called the No Hate Act that is now going to Congress that really needs to be passed. That act would provide resources to local state law enforcement authorities and give them the will to go ahead and report the problem. When we know the scope of the problem, that's when we'll be able to actually tackle it.
So I want to talk a little bit more about that, because at 35,000 feet, that sounds great, but I think that from a grassroots perspective, even when we get to police officers, for example, prosecutors, we have to address flippant comments about
sure.
someone having a bad
No, you're
day.
Right.
And,
you're
and,
absolutely right.
And so how do you get to that grassroots level in law enforcement and the prosecutorial process?
Well, look, I mean, I think that, you know, the truth of the matter is that there's a complete lack of diversity in prosecutor offices. And there needs to be more diversity in law enforcement, including police. There clearly needs to be rigorous hiring process, rigorous training process, where someone would not even contemplate saying what that Atlanta officer said. You know, that is contemptible and outrageous. And I think that rigorous hiring, rigorous discipline, rigorous accountability, rigorous training would go a long way in, you know, removing those types of people.
Ms. Wang, same question, but from your perspective, the boots on the ground piece, I think, is so important, particularly when you're talking about African-American and Asian-American relations. Do we first have to want to consider cultural competency about other cultures? Is that where we start? Do black people need to bristle when they hear a racist reference at an Asian-owned carryout and speak up about that? Is that what needs to happen? One situation at a time for us to be empathetic about the plight of other cultures as they deal with this broader issue of white supremacy?
I think it's largely a both and issue, because there are certainly policies and systems and structures, some of them at the federal level, some of them at the state level, and many of them at the local level, that work to oppress communities of color, that specifically work to oppress black people in this country, that specifically work to oppress immigrants in this country. And as we have seen in our history, many times that have worked to oppress Asian Americans in this country. And that's an issue. So we have to talk about policy and structural change. But I also agree that there have to be culturally informed conversations across communities, many of which are already happening right now. I bristle when I hear racist comments that have nothing to do with, you know, my Asianness, that are directed towards my, you know, brown and black brothers and sisters in my mm-hmm. community. Mm-hmm. And I know that they, in the past week, there's been an outpouring of support for the Asian American community from other communities of color, because I have to believe that we're all seeing the continuum of white supremacy in this country, and I think A.G. Racine has an excellent point about the fact that this police officer made those horribly sad remarks about the shooter having a bad day, and this was a person of power. This was a person in a position of power who not only made those remarks, but, you know, shortly after he made those remarks, it came to light that on his own public social media pages, he had been spreading anti-Asian hate and rhetoric all over the place, equating, you know, the pandemic with China. And our community, I think, you know, was already made very disheartened by the remarks about how the bad day remarks. But then when we saw that, it told us, you know, it taught us and it reminded us why so often communities of color don't trust law enforcement, because there are so many examples of you know, people in law enforcement being racist and sexist, including this officer who was selling T-shirts that had anti-Asian rhetoric on them on his social media pages. And this is, I think, you still have to tie it back to the fact that what happened outside Atlanta was very obvious in our community, very obviously racism, but it was also very obviously sexism. And what we called what happened, we call it a moment of it was essentially sexual violence against Asian American women, right? Because these women were targeted. And so I think, you know, when you have a tragedy like this and you see time and time again, you know, the investigation not work out or not be taken seriously, or remarks get made like this, and then you learn that, you know, even the person in charge of communicating with the community about what happened has been spewing this anti-Asian rhetoric. It's just very disheartening, and I think that there's a lot of healing and repair that has to start, quite frankly, with women and elders, because those are the two communities, the sub-communities within the Asian American community who are bearing the brunt of the racialized misogyny and the racism and sexism.
Attorney General Racine, Ms. Wang just said something that struck me about the situation in Georgia. If the women who were murdered were not of Asian descent, let's say they were some white or some black or all black, or no, some white and some black or all white, but the suspect still said that he did it because he was dealing with sex addiction. Because the lion's share of the women in this example, this hypothetical, these were still women, just not Asian women. Could that still be considered a hate crime based on gender but not on race?
So, yes, it depends which state you're at, because different states create protection based on status. And it could be, if the gender is protected as a status, that a hate crime can occur if women in particular are targeted. And so that's the intersectionality piece that Ms. Wang was talking about there. And that's a piece that is frighteningly common these days. There was a hate group, and I dare not say their name, I will, called Incel. They're called Incel because their real name is Incelibate. Mm-hmm. And they blame women for their condition, namely that women have not received their entreaties. And so when a woman was killed in Tallahassee in 2019 at a hot yoga studio because she was a woman by an incel guy, that was a hate crime. And so what we've got to really focus on, and this again is why the reporting of it is really important, we need to understand the scope of the problem. In 2019, the FBI reported that there were 51 hate crimes, the deadliest year on record. And again, I believe those statistics are underreported. We need to get the accurate data, and then we need to do the hard work of educating people about the history of our country and about the central equality of people. And we should show no tolerance for scapegoating. Mm-hmm. Scapegoating happens to everyone. It's a Mexican-American taking our job, a black person taking the job. You remember the Harvey Gantt campaign in North Carolina for the Senate in the last week of that race? What did Jesse Helms do?
Yeah.
He put an ad on with a black man giving a white man, all you saw were the hands, a pink slip, okay? So the scapegoating has to stop because it's dangerous, and leaders must speak out against it.
Ms. Wang, something that just popped up in my email, and I don't know whether or not you are aware of this, but tomorrow the mayor, Mayor Bowser, is holding a town hall, a telephone town hall, and it's titled Community Leaders in Conversation to Support the D.C. AAPI Community, the Asian American Pacific Island Community. Here in the District of Columbia, there are going to be several speakers, some of whom of Asian descent, that work for the government. Is this the type of thing that you were talking about earlier about conversations? And even though we are talking about a governmental agency, what would you hope would come out of this town hall or others like it?
I would hope that, you know, an investment that would go toward addressing anti-Asian hate through community-based solutions that really center the experiences and the demands of actual community members would be my top priority. But I think, you know, that there's a lot we can do here. You know, we have asked for funds for holistic wraparound victim assistance services that we hope would be in language. We're an incredibly diverse community, and part of being culturally informed in assisting our community is to make sure that what we produce and what we give to the community, you know, can actually be understood. You know, there has to be more investments in mental health. We have to ensure that immigrants can receive health care. You know, all of these things are a continuum. There's more that we can do to make sure that working class people, immigrants, women, the LGBTQ community, people of faith have what they need and know what their options are. So often I hear a reluctance to talk about what people have experienced in terms of hate and violence. And I'm specifically not using the phrasing hate crime because that's actually narrower than we know most people are experiencing. And part of why they may not feel like it's worth reporting is because they don't know what their options are. They don't know who to report to. They don't trust the data that's been collected because it's incomplete. Maybe you can't even disaggregate that data by gender, right? These are issues that we grapple with all too often. And so, you know, I'm happy that the mayor is listening to the community. I hope that she takes the recommendations from that town hall seriously in this time when we're still grieving what happened in Atlanta. But, you know, I think now we really need to be providing relief for the Asian American community here in D.C. and more broadly. Our community, similar to other communities of color, has been chronically underinvested in. And so, you know, I really think that meaningful supports that are culturally informed could go a long way. And I hope that something comes of that gathering. Mm-hmm.
Attorney General Racine, I'll let you have a final word. Talk to me about your thoughts regarding how the black community and the Asian community here in our area can work together to address this evil that we are hearing about now.
Yeah, I think it's all about, as Brian Stevens speaks about, a lot, proximity. And that is getting out of our bubbles, out of our shells, and engaging in interaction together. Learning more about the history of Asian Americans. Asian Americans learning more about the history of African Americans. And I have no doubt that if we share more time together, that we'll realize that there is no reason for the scapegoating or the division. Not every African American is a great person. Not every Asian person is kind and gentle. But most people are, particularly if we break down the barriers and dare to understand each other. That's the vision that I share, and I'm really pleased to have been on this program with you, Harold, and Ms. Wang.
And by the way, Brian Stevens, the author of the book Just Mercy and the inspiration for the movie of the same name. Great book, great movie. I highly recommend both. D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine and Jennifer Wang, thank you both for talking to us. We will be in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, for this Tuesday, March 23rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.